Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community, and we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. You can leave us a message if you want on the homepage, jewishsacredaging.com. There's a little voicemail icon on the right-hand side, and it's really cool to use if you want to do that. And so we welcome, with great pleasure, to the Seekers of Meaning microphone and program today, Rabbi Malka Drucker and Rabbi Nadja Gross, the authors of Embracing Wisdom, Soaring in the Second Half of Life, which is, that's pretty cool. You can learn how to soar in the second half of life. Malka and Nadja, welcome to Seekers of Meaning. How y'all doing today?
Thank you. Very well. Glad to be here.
We have a national hookup here, thanks to Steve, Rabbi Drucker from Idlewild in California, and Rabbi Gross from outside of Boulder, Colorado, and we're here in southern New Jersey, so the miracle of technology. Malka, Nadja, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it. This is a lovely little handbook, very easily applicable, by the way, to our colleagues for adult education or conversations within groups within the congregation, if you so choose. I want to start off with, you talk about the beginning of the book and this idea of four possibilities of approaching this third stage of life, four possibilities, including my hero, Peter Pan. I was a little concerned the way you just like put Peter down here, but talk to me a little bit about, you start right away, you go right into the book. Here are four possibilities of looking at this new stage of life. And it's choreographed by a little quote from, of all people, Leon Trotsky. Old age is the most unexpected of all things that happened to a man, to happen to anybody. It's probably one of the few books that Trotsky is going to make an appearance in that context. So, Mark, let me start with you. What's with the four possibilities of going forward?
Well, it's the boomer generation, and it seemed obvious to me how many of us were so unwilling to acknowledge, first of all, like Peter Pan, that we were indeed aging. And then we saw many of us suddenly going on cruises and doing a lot of fun things because life hadn't been too much fun yet, and occupying ourselves that way, and, you know, and going to wine country and learning how to drink wine maybe for the first time in our lives. And then the third group would be the ones who plastic surgeons adore, because they're the ones who just regard this as a sort of a pathology, aging, not a natural process. And then what Nadia and I were really hoping is to encourage more people to take the fourth path, which is to recognize this as a unique period, a stage of development, just like adolescence. And in this one, it's finally the opportunity to really grow wisdom.
The idea of growing wisdom and the concept of the elder, Nadja, because it's very interesting. I just was recently with a group of people trying to consult with them on setting up a program in their congregation, and they're struggling with language. You know, do we want to call this the senior citizens or this? I said, don't play around with those languages because you'll have an empty room. And since Malka, you referred this, references, Nadja, talk to me about this concept of the elder, because you both come out of the Zalman school. When you talk about the elder and this concept of approaching wisdom or gathering wisdom, walk me through that.
Right. Well, Reb Zalman himself was, when he wrote the book From Aging to Saging, his whole intention was to shift the paradigm, something that Reb Zalman was well known for, to shift the paradigm from growing older as something that we want to avoid or something that is painful or something that we're frightened of, to walking, you know, head on into this period of life that is so rich with potential yet and possibility. And so he called the process spiritual eldering, because his work was all about doing that inner work, right? And the relationship of one with one's own source of life, whatever you want to call it. Some of us call it God, creator, what have you. That it was a spiritual practice, this practice of growing into this. Malka and I also worked with all different kinds of language, the third act, the second half of life, because these are terms that are now being used, that they're sort of extant in the, you know, in the literature right now. And he called it spiritual eldering. Becoming an elder for him was also reclaiming those traditions, our own Jewish tradition, as well as many of the Eastern traditions and the Aboriginal and Native traditions that revered the elder, that recognized that the longer you live, the more wisdom and life experience you have acquired. And therefore, you now have something to offer, something that might seed, you know, the wisdom of future generations. And so eldering for us is a process. It's not a destination. You know, I'm old and there's nothing more I can do, but rather a process of growing through this third act or the last part of our lives, and always being in relationship with where we've been, who we are, where we're headed, and what it is we want to leave behind us.
The power of legacy is important in this stage of life, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to say that I've had the privilege in this last semester to teach saging, the saging work, in a program that I direct that trains Jewish spiritual directors. And their final project is to write their ethical will and share it with the entire class. And I am reading some of the most amazing gifts of legacy, right? Of what we want the next generation to know about what it is to live life in this world. And also the other part of our legacy is what we do at this stage of our lives to continue the work of tikkun, to improve the world and to support the next generations that are doing it in their own unique and marvelous way.
There's a tension that I feel as I see as I go around working with congregations and working with groups on as part of our work in Jewish sacred aging. And to be brutally honest, because Yom Kippur is only a few months away, also in my own life, in this stage of life, this tension of holding on and letting go. And this idea of we get to a certain stage, and maybe this third age or whatever the appropriate term is nowadays, of trying to make up our mind, what do we need to hold on to? But more importantly, or equally important, what do we need to let go of? The stuff that jumbles inside of our soul and becomes disease. It really impacts us. How do we handle that in this third stage of life? How do we approach this tension of what do we need to let go of? Just like we have to let go of that past hurt, that relationship that didn't go well, and just put it away. And what do we hold on to make sure that we can continue to grow? Any thoughts?
Well, Richard, that's a very good way of putting it, of the holding on and letting go. I'd like to give a couple of examples here. One is, when I first started doing this work, I found myself really going headlong into doing it. I asked Reb Zalman, Alav Shalom, that how do I really enter into doing this work, and also model letting go if I'm now really jumping into a whole new project. And I will tell you what his answer was. It was, well, you'll take a nap in the afternoon and you'll just work after that a little bit later. So Reb Zalman himself didn't exactly let go as a model, and he was very human about it. The other thing I wanted to say happened to me actually last week. My son and daughter-in-law went to Rancho La Puerta, where a spa in Mexico, where I had taught for about 4 or 5 years, and was gently let go of the last year, essentially to make room for younger teachers. And so when my son was visiting me, I said, you know, since your field is basically, you know, technology, maybe you'd like to propose at Rancho La Puerta that you teach a class in cybersecurity and, you know, identity theft. And he, in fact, proposed the idea, and they loved the idea, and he told me this, and that they were going to be teaching it. And the minute he said it, I realized I had been sort of nudging myself to come up with new ideas for the ranch to teach. And the minute he said, whoa, I don't have to do this. I can actually move off center stage and applaud from the wings what he is now doing. So that was my way of being able to let go and let my children do what I had once done.
And I wanted to add to Malka's wonderful response here that another part of what I was hearing in your question, Richard, was the stuff that we schlep with us into our eldering years that is the pain of the past, the unforgiveness, the shame of certain things that we did or didn't do, you know, the hurt, the wounds. And so that the saging work, and we, you know, we take people through these exercises in at the end of each one of our chapters, that Reb Zalman, most of them were developed by Reb Zalman. Part of what we're doing here as we are eldering is letting go of those hurts, wounds, and shame and blame by doing the forgiveness work, really forgiving ourselves and forgiving others, and learning that forgiveness is not about condoning things that happened, but about really relieving ourselves of the burden of unforgiveness that we are carrying. You know, it's not surprising that we get more and more bent over as we get older. We're carrying a lot of weight of things if we don't do that work. And the other thing that he taught us was a process of recontextualizing, so that as we look at our lives from the longer view, we can see certain things that we've always remembered as a painful moment. We now see it in the context of our whole lives. And sometimes we realize that that most painful moment where I got fired from my first job and I've always been ashamed of what happened or whatever, now I see that had I not been fired from that job, I would have not taken that next turn in my life and moved into a field that really suited me, or become the person that I am today. And so now, rather than seeing it as something shameful that I want to hide from, I can actually bless it and say, thank you. It was painful in the moment, and it set me on this path. So that's so much a part of our work, is learning how to let go of those kinds of things. And then, you know, as Malka spoke to the doing of our lives, Reb Zalman would teach us that a lot of what we want to do is distill our doing down to that which is uniquely ours, that remains ours to do, and to give to others lots of the things that we always did that they can now do probably even better than we ever did, because they have a new worldview to bring to it. And it's no longer ours to do, but what remains ours, you know, that is uniquely given to us to do, we distill our doing down to just that. And we can be grateful for the, you know, for that, for the extra time that it leaves us in our lives.
We're speaking with Rabbi Malka Drucker and Rabbi Nadja Gross, the authors of Embracing Wisdom, Soaring in the Second Half of Life, and we'll include the contact information for the book in the show notes for this episode of the podcast. You mentioned in the middle of the book, the gift of forgiveness. And Nadja, you sort of like alluded to this. What is the, that's a tough gift to either give, but I would imagine it's an even tougher gift to accept.
Yes, a very good point, Richard. There's an expression, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? As we age and our bodies require more energy for maintenance, and we recognize we don't have all the time in the world, we come to realize that actually being happy feels a whole lot better than being right, number one. Number two, as Nadja said so well, that recognizing in our recontextualizing a story that we've been carrying as a negative for so much of our lives, that in fact, suddenly now, with enough time and years of life experience, we recognize that it ain't necessarily so the way we've been telling this story. So the opportunity now to pull the arrow out of our hearts, to offer a unilateral forgiveness, even if we think it should be the other way around, we recognize, again, as Nadja says, being bent over with the weight of all these heavy memories, we're lightened from the forgiveness. Reb Zalman also makes the point that those of us who have children always have to do a lot of self-forgiveness. And that's another very important process, is to give ourselves self-forgiveness and have greater acceptance of who we are. But I must say that one of the questions that I have now is, how do we deal with current hurts, you know, in this time of our lives as sages, as elders? Are we more skilled, and are we able to recognize, you know, look, we're human, we did the best we could, and it really turned out better than we realized, and we can move forward. I mean, it really is about doing whatever we can to keep moving forward and still hold acknowledgement of what has happened and recognize it as part of our lives.
But that self-forgiveness thing is very difficult as we get older, I would imagine. I mean, in the workshops that the two of you do, I would imagine you hear some very amazing stories, and it's just tough. It's just tough sometimes to say, yeah, what I did 30 years ago, all right, it's over with. I can't go back. I can't replay the tape.
You know, Richard, I want to say that two really important lessons that I learned in doing this work, and clearly they came from, you know, Reb Zalman. The one is that regret is a motivator, right? And so we can regret that we did certain things. We can regret that certain things happened the way they did. And that that regret alone informs us that we know better now. We may not have, we did the best we could do then. We know better now. And we will do differently and continue to grow differently as a result of that. The other thing was a moment that I experienced when the book, The December Project, was published not long before Reb Zalman's death. It was the final, you know, his final say, I'm growing older. It was about the December years of his life, written by Sarah Davidson so beautifully. He and Sarah Davidson had a public appearance here in Boulder to launch the book. And he said in front of all of these people, he said, you know, sometimes I still want to be really angry at my younger self. I really want to be angry. Why couldn't you have done this? Or why did you have to do that? He said, and then I see my younger self rise up at me and shake his finger at me and say, don't you blame me, old man. It's because of me that you are you.
we are the collective summary of all of our life experiences, right? I mean, that's exactly. Can't change it. You do exactly. Have in the beginning of the book, towards the beginning of the book, this statement that the only way to find meaning is to confront one's own mortality, which is really a challenge. So could Malka start to unpack that for me? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, for many, many years, Richard, I referred to that stage as a temporary setback, my mortality. And Nadja has a right to laugh now, because as we worked on this book, I kept bumping into my frank fear of death. And Nadja, you know, she's younger than I am, however, also perhaps wiser in this place, would catch me on it. And I said, oh yeah, there I am again, trying to avoid that subject. One of the most profound teachings for me was taking this class that based on Reb Zalman's work from Shai Eisenberg and Bahira Sugarman, and being walked through a guided meditation of the last day of my life. And that experience of actually entering the imaginal realm, when I came out of it, I was far better at accepting this. The other point I want to make about this is, with everything that we've been talking about, is that, as Nadja says, it's a process. And for myself, this fear of death is not over. It's something I revisit and then confront and walk back each time. Same thing with forgiveness. There are certain people that every single day I offer them forgiveness, because if I don't, I'm going to start to build up that bad story one more time. So as for mortality, the best I can do right now maybe is to imagine, just like John Lennon said, you get out of one car and get into another. But I really kind of am aiming at this time of my life for a very glorious, terrific end, where I feel like, what a fantastic ride this has been. And I'll have no resentment that it's come, and no fear that it's come, and be ready for that adventure.
Wow. I admire that. That's pretty cool.
I love hearing that, Malka. I love hearing that, and I'm going to hold you to it. And I want to add the issue of meaning. My father died at a very young age, and that was the moment in my life where I learned that there are no guarantees, and death can come, you know, out of the blue, or it can come at the end of a long life. And I made it my responsibility to make some kind of meaning out of mortality. And then Reb Zalman made that part of the foundation of the spiritual eldering work. He articulates 10 things that are the essential things of the spiritual eldering work. And we base our book on those 10 things, our 10 chapters. And the first one is to be willing to deal with life completion, to overcome the denial, the desire to stay in denial of aging. And the second is to confront your mortality. And what I learned when it became painfully aware that we are all going to die at some point, and I started sort of playing with that idea, what I learned was that this moment then is that much more precious, because I don't know if there will be a next moment. And so the idea that living my life in the face of my mortality makes every moment meaningful and purposeful, and that what I have to do is live my life with that meaning. Right? That's what what that statement meant to say to all of us.
But it's, yes, I don't think anybody would disagree. The challenge, of course, is how do you actualize that in the real world, given so many challenges that so many people deal with, where they're so overwhelmed by the context of the immediate moment that it's hard to understand how it's hard, I think, to step back even for, even sometimes for those of our generation who are, quote, retired, unquote, to step back and say, I have to understand that time is the one thing I can't control. And so every moment has to have is an opportunity for meaning for myself. And of course, then the other issue is in the reality of American life or our society's life, where you live and how you and how much what economic opportunities you have, because I wonder if the person who is living paycheck to paycheck and struggling just to subsist on a Social Security check and worried about healthcare, if God forbid, if they get sick, really has the time to contemplate their own meaning as opposed to how am I going to get through the day? And that's perhaps a societal challenge that we all face. Because this longevity has given us the opportunity to have these conversations where a couple of generations ago, not that long ago in human history, we never would have had these conversations, not as a society. I don't think. Which leads me to another question. And one of you alluded to it before, the tension, and I'm seeing this now in some of the workshops that we do in Jewish sacred aging, this, not tension, it's probably the wrong word. This dichotomy between happiness, the American ideal of happiness, versus gratitude. And it's been explained to me that, yes, now that I'm a little older and have this opportunity to reflect, I'm not so much worried about being happy, whatever that means, but I'm much more aware of being grateful. Could you guys comment on that?
I think that that's a very, very wise perception, Richard. I am now reaching a time in my life where I'm saying goodbye to friends. And what I realize is that the final gift we give, for which those who remain have gratitude, is that when we leave, we're a stark reminder for those who still live to really live and to be grateful for every moment. David White speaks of our conversations with reality, that when we just open our eyes and look around and see everything, we are in a conversation with what is before us. So for me, I think that yes, as we hope that forgiveness grows in us, so should gratitude. And happiness is a complicated word of what that actually means. It's not very specific of what it brings. But I think this sense of well-being does grow in us. And the other point connected to this is, as Sherwin Nuland said, the ultimate act of generosity is in our dying, because we die so that others live. So we can at least feel that if we, with all of our fears, as you very well point out, the shadow of longevity right now, in practical terms, is that at least we know that no matter what we've done in our lives, this is an act of generosity, leaving the planet willingly or unwillingly.
Why is it generosity?
Because we die so that others live. We make room. We make room for others to have their lives. If we live forever.
So this whole anti-aging movement that's popping up and has been written about, my sense is then that you would you say that is futile?
I'd say it's also greedy.
In what way?
That, just because I want to live forever, it deprives resources for others, and of course it's futile. There's no question. But maybe it's not. Who knows? Who knows what may happen in this world technologically? Yet it seems to me that ultimately, if we understand, it's time for us to leave the party, reluctant as we may be, it's still, we're making room for someone else to sit at that table.
Well, I guess that's part of the holding on and letting go tension.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's sort of like I'm reflecting upon those last some chapters in the old Mitch album book, Tuesdays with Maury. That, you know, everybody, we are part of nature, and this is part of the natural process of things, regardless of where you are. And then in one of the conversations between Maury and Mitch, Maury brings up the idea that as long as you have love. So before we start running out of time, what's the importance of love? And I'm not just talking about romantic love. I'm talking about just the sense of, because I'm finding this more and more of a conversation as we do workshops, the sense of intimacy and connection as we get older. Nadja?
It gives our lives purpose and meaning.
Meaning?
Right? To love and to be loved. The relationship, the cyclical, the giving, the receiving, the, you know, the holding on and letting go, all of that is what love is about, isn't it? And so to me, there's, you know, and we see this when we look at elders who are dying alone, or the old warehousing technique of putting grandma in a home and never going to visit her again, how different that they are from those who are growing older with the same ailments perhaps and the same issues, surrounded by love and able to express their love. It's everything that we want to know at the end of our lives, I think, is wrapped up in my life had meaning and there was a purpose to it. And love is at the heart of that.
One of the issues that we keep running into is one of the fears in this stage of life. And we seem to have an epidemic of this in the United States, can't speak for other countries. And this epidemic of loneliness, which seems to be, I don't know, it's getting written about more and more and more, but as technology creates things and as mobility creates issues, but this fear of being alone in this last stage of life. Malka, are you seeing this in your work?
Yes, I think very much. And the irony of this is, Richard, is that when I visit senior residences where people are living together, you know, it's not necessarily a comfort. It's in fact for many in these places, because it's somewhat infantilizing that they're no longer needed in the world, and they're all sort of thrust together in this place of some uselessness. They're just consumers. Whereas, again, going back to that story about seeing my son now take the place that I had, that's what I think ultimately the elder really has the capacity and power to do, is to love in this completely generous way without competition anymore. That we've had the doing part of our lives, and now what we may, the most active thing we can do is to cheer on selflessly with love the next generation and to support that generation. So I think that you know, early on I could say that I understand that we're just here in this gigantic classroom called the world, and these little spaceships, our bodies, to learn one lesson, which is how to love and how to receive love. And I would hope that at the time of our lives, we're no longer so preoccupied with our accomplishment and our doing and all that whole skill set, that we're here for that purpose alone, is to really put as much love into this world as we can while we can.
Well, that's a good place to end on the idea of love. We've been talking with Rabbi Malka Drucker and Rabbi Nadja Gross, the authors of Embracing Wisdom, Soaring in the Second Half of Life. And again, we'll include the contact information for the book in the show notes for this episode of Seekers of Meaning. Nadja and Malka, thank you very, very much for giving us a very lovely introduction to the book. Good luck with the book and just stay healthy. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Happy Hanukkah. And yes. Thank all of you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me, rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And again, we invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We thank you for your continued support of our work. And if you'd like to make a tax-exempt donation to help further the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Secrets of Meaning podcasts, please go to our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and click on the donate icon at the top of the page. We greatly appreciate your support. Secrets of Meaning is recorded here at the studios of Lubetkin Media Company in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And we thank our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Secrets of Meaning. Shalom.